Osho, Come Follow Yourself, Volume 3, Reflections on Jesus of Nazareth, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 9.
Bhagwan, then said some of them of Jerusalem, Howbeit we know this man, whence he is. But when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. Then cried Jesus in the temple as he taught, saying, Ye both know me, and ye know whence I am. And I am not come of myself, but he that sent me is true, whom ye know not. But I know him, for I am from him, and he hath sent me. Then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him, because his hour was not yet come. And many of the people believed on him, and said, When Christ cometh, will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done? The Pharisees heard that the people murmured such things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. Then said Jesus unto them, Yet a little while I am with you, and then I go unto him that sent me. In the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, If any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink.
The other day, I was reading few lines from E. Cummings. Seeker of truth, follow no path. All paths lead where truth is here. Truth is always here. That is the only way the truth can be. Truth cannot be anywhere else. The only time it can be is here, and the only place it can be is now. But the mind is never here and is never now. Hence, mind and truth never meet. The mind goes on thinking about truth, and the truth goes on waiting to be realized. But the meeting never happens. The meeting is possible only if mind stops functioning. Because mind means the past, mind means the future. Mind is never here now. Whenever you start thinking, you are going astray. If you stop thinking, suddenly you are at home. You had never gone from there. The whole wandering is like a dream. Otherwise, you have lived in God. You have lived as gods. That's the only way to be. But you don't realize it because you go on thinking about it. The rose is before your eyes, but you are too full with the ideas about the rose. Jesus was standing and people were thinking. And he was in front of them, but they were not there. They were thinking about the scriptures, what the scriptures say. Then said some of them of Jerusalem, and it is meaningful. that the Gospels say, though some of the people who said these words belong to Jerusalem, the sacred place, the holy place, the holy place becomes the most unholy. Because when people think they know, they are the most ignorant people. Because those who know that they know not. It has happened always. Go to Varanasi and you will find only parrots, great scholars, but without any realization. Go to Mecca and you will find great Maulvis who know everything about and know nothing, who can recite the whole Quran. They have memorized it. They have become great computers. But the knowledge of reality has not dawned on them. Their innermost shrine remains dark, unlit, and they go on talking about light. It is meaningful, the Gospel says, then said some of them of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the Mecca of Jews, and then it became the Mecca of Christians also. It is the Varanasi of the West. Whenever a certain place becomes a sacred place, it loses all sacredness. Otherwise, whole existence is holy. But whenever religion is organized, truth made a doctrine, and scholars become more important than mystics. Information becomes more important than knowledge, then this misfortune happens. Those people of Jerusalem, they knew all. When Jesus comes, the scriptures say, nobody will know from where he comes. Howbeit, we know this man whence he is, they said. But when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. A very pertinent question, because they knew it well, this man comes. From where? His father, his mother, brothers and sisters, they knew all about them. And this information clouded their minds. In fact, do you know from where you come? Do you come from your father? Do you come from your mother? Maybe you come through them, but you don't come from them. Maybe you pass through them. They may be like crossroads, but you don't come out of them. It is said, when Buddha became enlightened and he came back to visit his father, the father was very angry and he said, I can forgive you because I have a father's heart. But drop all this nonsense. You belong to the family of an emperor and don't move like a beggar. You are my son. Buddha laughed and said, sir, I may come through you. but I don't belong to you. I may come through you, but I don't belong to you. To whom do you belong? If you go deeper in yourself, you find a mysterious silence. No answer comes. Your body may have been contributed by our mother and father, but not your consciousness. Your mind even may have been contributed by the society, the community, by your family, the education, but not your consciousness. That one who you are comes from nowhere. Yes, scriptures say, and they say rightly, that when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. I tell you, the moment you come to know that you know not from where you are, you have become a Christ. This is the whole meaning of it. The moment you realize that your origin is shrouded in mystery, that your beginning and your end are mysterious, and there is no way to know them, because you have been always and always and always. In fact, there have been never a beginning. That's the meaning when I say they are shrouded in mystery. They cannot be known, because there has been no beginning to know. You have been here before time started. You have been here before space ever existed, and you will be here till the very end of time, and even after that. Time came after you. So there is no beginning. Once you realize this, suddenly you have become the Christ. The realization that I am beyond time is the meaning of the word Christ. Scriptures say perfectly and rightly. But when parrots recite scriptures, the whole meaning is lost. Not only they have not understood what is said, they have misunderstood also. Christ is standing before them, a man who has realized that he comes from nowhere. God means nowhere. God means no when. God means the source which is beyond beginning and beyond end. The source has to be beyond beginning and beyond end. It happened once. Diogenes put up a tent in the marketplace in Athens on a very busy crossroad. And on the tent he wrote, "Wisdom sold here." One of the richest men was passing. He looked at it. He laughed. And he told his servant to go with 5 gold coins and ask this beggar how much wisdom he can give for 5 gold coins. The servant went, the rich man waited outside. Diogenes pocketed the money, wrote a small wisdom bit on a paper, and gave it to the servant. It said, "Whatsoever you do, Always remember your beginning and the end. The rich man became serious. He had laughed before. And he loved that wisdom bit so much that he had written it on his palace in gold letters. Whatsoever you do, but always remember your beginning and the end. Because whatsoever you do is meaningless unless somehow it is related with your beginning and the end. If you go on doing things which are not related with your beginning and with your end, that means if they are not related with God, then your life will be a trivia, a heap of rubbish. It won't carry any meaning. The meaning belongs to the whole. The meaning belongs to the source and the culmination. If you forget the source and the end, your life will be just a drifting thing, meaningless coincidences. But there will not be a running theme in it, and there will not be significance in it. You will not really exist. You will just live. You may continue living, but your life will not have a rhythm. It will not be a song. It will not have inner consistency. It will not be relevant. Howbeit, we know this man whence he is. Nobody knows. You don't know even from where you come. But those people thought they know well from whence he is. But when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. The scripture says absolute truth, but nobody knows from where anybody comes. The source is mysterious. It is shrouded, and there is no way to know it. Because you are the knower, and you can never become the known. Let me repeat it. You are the knower, and you can never be reduced to be the known. You are the subjectivity, and you can never become the object. So how can you know yourself who you are? How can you know yourself from where you come? How can you know the beginning? This feeling that I don't know who I am, this feeling that I don't know from where I come, this feeling that I don't know where I am going, if becomes intense, the ego drops. Because then there is no props for it. Then the ego cannot stand. It needs three props. It is a three-legged stool. Who I am, from where I come, and where I am going. These three legs are needed for the ego. If these three legs disappear, the ego falls. Once it happened, one of the greatest rich men of this century, Andrew Carnegie, was asked by a man, "What do you think, sir, is the most important thing in industry? Money, labor, our brains?" Andrew Carnegie said, it is a three-legged stool. And which leg is more important? In fact, if you withdraw one leg, the stool will fall. The two legs won't be able to help it. If you withdraw one thing, if you start feeling that I don't know who I am, immediately the other two legs will be useless. Or you withdraw the first leg, that I don't know from where I come, then the other two will be not of any use. The props will drop and the ego will fall. Ego is a three-legged stool. You have at least to believe who you are in the name, in the form, from where you come, your family, where are you going, a certain idea about your destiny. Then the ego can exist. A man becomes Christ when all these three legs disappear. That's why the old scriptures say, when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. And Christ was standing before these blind people. And they were asking foolish questions and arguing foolish things. And they were very clever people. People of Jerusalem. They were very intelligent, clever people. They could argue and discuss. In fact, Jesus was not so educated, so well informed as they were. Jesus was an uneducated man, in a sense uncultured, unsophisticated. And remember, God has happened many more times to unsophisticated people than to sophisticated people. Because the sophisticated believes that he already knows. Once you think that you know, then there is no possibility to know. I will tell you a story. Once a prospector climbed a mountain to seek gold. On the way up, he fell down and struck his head. In his dizziness, he imagined he had found hundreds of gold nuggets. So, wandering around town, he offered non-existent gold to everyone he met. Of course, he has become mad and a laughingstock for the whole community. A sage took pity over him, over the poor rich man. He hit him hard on the head. The blow cleared his head. In shock and dismay, he realized his former folly. How incredible of me to imagine I possessed gold, he told himself. Then an astonishing thing happened. Once realizing he didn't possess gold, he began to search and to find gold nuggets. Once realizing he didn't possess gold, he started the search. And when you seek, you find. Spiritual riches follow awareness of poverty. That is the one and the only order of things. Says Buddha, es dhammo sanantano. This is the eternal law. That once you realize that you are spiritually poor, you are already on the way to be rich. Once you realize that you are ignorant, you have taken the first and the most basic step towards wisdom. Once you realize that you have gone astray, your life is already changing. Now, the true path is not far away. But if you think that you are not astray, that you are on the right path, that you know, that you already possess that which you don't possess, then there is no possibility. Then you are closed. Anyone can see the difference between real and imaginary riches. He can inquire. You can inquire and always inquire. Let this be a criterion to find out whether your riches are imaginary or real. Do I feel rich when all by myself? Or do I constantly need others to reassure me? Go on asking this question. If you can feel rich when by, just by yourself alone, and you don't need anybody else to reassure you, you don't need anybody else's opinion, anybody else's certificate that you are rich. If you can be rich when all by yourself, then your riches are real. If you need constant reassurement from others, then your riches are unreal, imaginary. Then you are just depending on others' opinion. Remember this. Many times people come to me to be reassured. They ask, they say, I'm feeling very happy and blissful. What do you say? What is the need? The very need shows that the happiness is unreal and imaginary. If you are really feeling happy, you are feeling happy even if the whole world contradicts you. If the whole world agrees that you are not happy, then too it doesn't matter. Your happiness is real. It cannot be cancelled by anybody's opinion. But if your happiness is unreal, it can be cancelled by anybody. Even a small child can cancel. You will be constantly looking towards people. You will be smiling, trying to show that you are happy, so that they can say, yes, you are very happy. You look very happy. Always remember this criterion. Only the false needs support. The real is self-evident. Only the false needs certificates. The real is self-evident. People used to ask Christ, from where is your authority? The authority is His. It happened when I came out of the university. I applied for a government job. The education minister called me for an interview and he asked for some character certificates. I said, I'm here. You look at me. I can sit here. You can watch me. I can live with you for a few days if you like. But don't ask about certificates. Who can give me a character certificate? He couldn't understand. He said, you can bring from your vice chancellor, or at least from your head of the department. I said, if my vice chancellor asks for a character certificate from me, I am not going to give him. So how can I ask a character certificate from him? I cannot give him. So that is impossible. I can ask a character certificate only from a man whom I can see that he is a man of character. But that will be absurd. That means first I give him a character certificate. Only then his character certificate becomes meaningful. But he couldn't follow. He said, then it will be difficult. Because at least two character certificates are needed. So I wrote a character certificate in the name of my vice chancellor. And I went to the vice chancellor later on and said, I have given the true copy. Original I don't have. This is the certificate I have given to myself. You have to sign it. He said, but this is absurd. He said, how can you give a character certificate to yourself? I told him that if I cannot give to myself, then who can give it to me? I know myself more than anybody else knows me. You don't know me at all. If you can give a character certificate to me, then why not I can give? And this is the certificate. You have to sign it. He looked into the certificate. He laughed. Because I had written in the certificate that man is a freedom and character is always of the past and future remains open. I may have been a good man up to now. Next moment, nobody knows. I may have been a saint up to now, but who can prevent me from the next moment I can become a sinner? In fact, each moment I have to give a new lease to my character again and again and again. I have to hold it. Character belongs to the past. And you asked for a character certificate to be reassured about the future, which is foolish. Future remains open. Future remains always open. Next moment is always indeterminate. That is the difference between a stone and a man. You can give a character certificate to a rock. The rock is consistent. It has remained always a rock, and it is going to remain always a rock. It is predictable. But how can you give a character certificate to a man? A sinner sometimes becomes a saint. A saint becomes a sinner. That is the beauty of man, that man has no character. Only rocks have character. More alive you are, less character. Absolutely alive, no character. Then you are absolute freedom. Facing Christ, people ask about authority. They ask about character. They ask that Christ should fulfill the predictions of the scriptures. Why should Christ fulfill the prediction of the scriptures? He is not a rock. He is total freedom, absolute freedom. That is his beauty and glory. But people believe in dead things. People believe in dead gods. They are dead. They feel comfortable with dead gods. If you are alive, only then you can feel comfortable with a alive God. But alive God means freedom. Each moment, one has to decide again and again who one is going to be. Each moment is a decisive moment. And each moment, you can change everything. You may not change. That too is your decision. But each moment one has to decide continuously, constantly. Character is not something which is there just like a dead rock. It has to be lived, acted, decided. Each moment you are born again and again. Each moment you die. And each moment you are born again and again. But people go on asking. And people of Jerusalem or Varanasi, they are the most dead people there are. Jerusalem is one of the most ancient cities in the world. That means carries a very long and dead past. And always thinks in terms of the past, never in terms of the future. They couldn't see the future. Jews missed Christ. With Christ was the destiny and the future. But they were asking questions about the past. They couldn't see. They have no eyes to perceive that a new beginning has started. God has taken a new step in this man. God has taken a new decision in this man. God is taking a very decisive and historical decision. The whole humanity will be different through this man. No more man will be the same as he was before. A turning point. But that is all in the future. Jews were standing there. Jesus is an opening towards the future. They were looking at the past. They were looking at the clouds of dust that are left behind. They couldn't see the sun that was rising. Howbeit, we know this man whence he is, but when Christ cometh, no man knoweth whence he is. Then cried Jesus in the temple as he taught, saying, ye both know me, and you know whence I am. And I am not come of myself, but he that sent me is true, whom ye know not. Jesus cried. People like Jesus have to cry because we are deaf. And even when they cry, we don't listen. And even when we listen, we don't understand. And even when we understand, we don't act. I will tell you one story. A group of unhappy men and women heard about a peaceful place called the Celestial City. Wishing to live in it, they consulted a wise man who told them, go to the edge of the town There you will see footprints. Follow them all the way to the celestial city. When locating the footprints, part of the group turned back immediately, complaining, but the lead stayed into the frightening wilderness. The rest of the group followed the footprints for a short distance, but several more stopped when it started to rain. After a few more miles, the group broke up into two quarreling factions, each demanding the right to lead the expedition. The battle raged so fiercely, they forgot all about the celestial city and returned home to continue the fight. When observing all this, the wise man explained to his disciples, "Because of man's dazed mind, this is what always happens. Still, people must be told about the footprints. Every once in a while, a persevering man or woman follows them all the way to the celestial city. Man goes on misunderstanding. God goes on sending his messengers. Man goes on misinterpreting. God goes on making new efforts. Man goes on crucifying. God goes on hoping. God hopes tremendously. He is not yet frustrated with you. He still hopes. His hope is eternal. Whatsoever you do makes no difference to his hope. He goes on making new efforts. He goes on devising new methods. A Jesus is a device. A Buddha is a device. A Krishna is a device. God comes again and again in different forms. Maybe you rejected one form, you may accept another. He hopes continuously. Remember this. And always remember that I am not talking about dead people who sometime lived in Jerusalem. I am talking about you. I am not talking about some fools who couldn't understand Jesus. I am talking about you. Because it is always the same. Always Jesus is there. And always people are quarreling about meaningless doctrines and dogmas. Quoting scriptures. Creating smoke around their themselves and not looking at the fact. Jesus is a divine fact. God is standing in front of them and they are trying whether he is really the God. And what was the trouble? They could not believe in him because Jesus could not follow all the predictions of the old prophets. Nobody is there to follow anybody else's predictions. And this is the foolishness. Jews rejected Christ because they think he didn't follow all the predictions. And Christians go on proving that he followed all the predictions. That's why they accept him. Look at the foolishness. It is the same. Nobody looks at Jesus directly. Jews reject, but the argument is the same. That he does not follow all the predictions that the scriptures say a Christ has to follow. Christians say he follows. The argument is the same. The mind is the same. They don't differ. Both are missing. They may be standing opposite to each other, but their attitude is the same. Nobody is looking at Christ. Nobody is following the footprints to the celestial city. They have come back home to continue the fight. Then cried Jesus in the temple as he taught, saying, "Ye both know me, and ye know whence I am." He is saying, "You know not. You don't know me, and you don't know whence I am. And I am not come of myself. Nobody has come that way. Everybody comes from God. In fact, nobody comes. Everybody is sent. Everybody comes from the whole. Were you asked to decide whether you would like to come to the world or not? Nobody has ever asked. It has never been your decision. You have been sent. The whole has sent you. As the ocean waves itself into thousand and thousand waves, God waves in humanity, in life, in thousand and thousand waves. You are a wave in His consciousness. You may have started to feel that you are separate, but that is illusion, that is Maya. And I am not come of myself, but He that sent me is true, whom ye know not. And Jesus is not saying anything about the man Jesus. He is saying about each human consciousness. Whatsoever He is saying about Himself is relevant to you also. There again, Jews thought that He is very egoistic. He claims that He comes from God. And a prophet has to be humble. And He doesn't seem to be humble at all. And Christians think that He is claiming something about Himself, not about everybody else. So if somebody else says that I am Son of God, Christians will be immediately against Him. This man is a heretic. There has been only one and only one Son of God, and that's Jesus Christ, the only begotten Son. What I am trying to show to you is that the mind is the same, whether it is Jew or Christian makes no difference. Mind as such is stupid. And unless mind is dropped, you can become a Jew or a Christian or a Hindu. It is not going to make any difference. But I know Him, for I am from Him. And He hath sent me. This is beautiful, the word sent. Nobody comes. Everybody is sent. Everybody is a messenger. Because everybody carries a message within him, a destiny to be fulfilled. A seed. You are not from yourself. Nobody is. Nobody can be. Everybody comes out of the whole. And the whole must be sending a coded message in you. You may not have deciphered yet. You may not have been able to decode yet. One who decodes it understands. Jesus decoded it. He understood the message. Why He has been sent. The first thing to realize very deeply is that you have not come, you have been sent. Small words make a lot of difference. I have heard about a warrior in Japan. In the First World War, he was a samurai, a great warrior. His one arm was hurt too much, wounded too much. It had to be removed. After the operation, when the warrior came back to his consciousness, the surgeon told him that, "I am very sorry, because you had to lose your arm." The warrior tried to raise himself up and protested. He said, "I have not lost it. I gave it. I have not lost it. I gave it." Tremendously different. He has given it. If you say Jesus lost his life, you will be wrong. He gave it. He gave it for us. He gave it for the message. He gave it for the mission for which he was sent. "For I am from him, and he hath sent me." Always remember, whenever Jesus talks about God, he means the whole. His terminology is not so perfect as Buddha's. Even Buddha's terminology is not so perfect as Lao Tzu. Because a terminology does not depend on Buddha, Jesus or Lao Tzu. It depends on the people to whom they are talking. Jesus was talking to Hebrews, to Jews. They have a terminology. He has to use it. There was no other way. If he started talking like a Buddha, nobody would have understood. Not at all. Even when he was using their own terminology, he was not understood. There is no possibility that if he had used the terminology of Buddha, that he would have been understood. Because the terminology of Buddha needs a long heritage of Upanishadic teaching. Buddha was against Upanishads, but Upanishads prepared the background. Without Upanishads, he could not have been here. Lao Tzu uses such a beautiful terminology that nobody ever can find a fault with it. But that is the reason he could never become such a great religious leader as Buddha or Jesus. Nobody understood him. He talks very simple. He is the simplest possible man. He has no jargon. He does not use the word God at all. He does not use any terminology of theology, religion. Because of this, nobody understood him. Nobody even tried to crucify him. Nobody threw even a stone at him, because even for that you have to misunderstand it at least. If you don't understand, okay, but you have to misunderstand at least. Lao Tzu was simply neglected. I have heard a story. Once he was going from one town to another on his donkey. A messenger from the emperor came and told Lao Tzu that the emperor has heard about you and he would like you to become a part of his court. He needs wise men to be there. Lao-tzu treated the messenger very courteously. And when the messenger was gone, but he said, no, it is impossible. Ungrateful. Thank the emperor. But it is impossible. When the messenger was gone, he washed his ears with water, and he washed the ears of the donkey also. A man who was standing by the road, he asked, what are you doing, sir? He said, I am washing my ears, because even the message from the world of politics is dangerous. The man asked, but why are you washing the ears of the donkey? He said, donkeys are very political. He has already walking in a different way. The moment he heard and saw the messenger from the coach, he has become very egoistic. Donkeys tend to be political. And I don't understand much the language of the court, he said, but he understands. Because similar donkeys are there. The language is the same. The man laughed. It is said, even when the story was reported to the king, he also laughed. People laughed about Lao Tzu at the most, a crazy old man, eccentric, but nobody took him seriously. And he never could influence people to such an extent that they should organize his teaching. No religion, no organization could come out of his teachings. He remained alone. He remains alone, but purest. Jesus was talking to Jews. They have a particular terminology of God, prophets, kingdom of God. He has to use that. But remember always, whenever he says God, he means Tao. He cannot mean anything else. And don't ask me by what authority I say. I am not a pope. I am not a Vatican pope. I have no authority. But I say to you, by my own authority. Whenever he says God, he means Tao. Whenever he says, he hath sent me, he means the whole has sent me. Then Jesus will appear in a different light. And then you will be able to understand him more and follow him more and go further than ordinarily you can go with him. And then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him, because his hour was not yet come. Existence is not a chaos. It is a cosmos. Existence is not just by chance. It has a story to tell. It has a running theme. It has a song to sing. It is a great drama. Hindus call it Leela. A great drama. A great play. That is what is meant by this gospel sentence, this sutra, because his hour was not yet come. This is a deep acceptance of things. People who wrote the gospel were closest to Jesus. They understood one thing, that whatsoever was happening as part of a great drama. If you have that feeling, you start accepting things. They could accept even the crucifixion of Jesus because that was part of the great drama. It was meant to be so. They could accept it because it was not just chance, not just coincidence. It has to be so. A Judas has to betray Jesus. Because whenever a Jesus is there, a shadow falls. Just as you walk in the sun and a shadow follows you. Whenever in the world of consciousness somebody rises so high, a shadow falls. That shadow is the Judas. It has to be so. And whenever you want to transform humanity, whenever you want to bring a new truth into human consciousness, the human mind defends itself. It becomes aggressive against you. Jesus has to be crucified. That's how human mind functions. It is a great drama. It is a cosmos. Then everything is accepted. Once you look at life not as unrelated facts but a related whole, then everything fits in. Then there is no need to complain. Then there is no need to feel frustrated or to feel that there is injustice. Just try to see the beauty of it. Jesus was crucified, but the closest disciples never felt that something wrong has happened. Not that they didn't miss him. They missed him. They missed him tremendously. Not that they didn't cry for him. They cried, but they accepted. They accepted because it must be so. There must be a meaning in it. We may not be able to know the meaning, but there must be a meaning in it. Because nothing can happen which is meaningless. Nothing can happen which is unrelated to the whole. We may not be able to know the meaning of a certain fact, because we know only the isolated fact. We cannot see the whole in relation to it. Whatsoever we see is just like as if suddenly you have come across a page of a book. Just a strong wind has brought a page of a book to your door. By curiosity, you start reading it. You cannot make any sense out of it, because it is just a page. You don't know what happened before. You don't know what happened afterwards. All facts that we know are just pages, not even pages. Broken sentences. Not even broken sentences, broken words. Because the whole book of existence is so vast, so eternal. We cannot know what it means. Meaning always means relevance in concern with the whole, in relationship with the whole. A poetry is meaningful because you can relate words from one to another. They are not unrelated. It is meaningful because between the words you can see the flow of a certain meaning. If you cannot see the meaning, if you just cut few words from a dictionary and paste them with closed eyes on a paper and then read it, there will be no meaning. Separate words, not connected. Then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him because his hour was not yet come. And many of the people believed on him and said, when Christ cometh, will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done? Ordinary people, they believe in miracles. They can't see the phenomenon, the tremendous phenomenon that has happened. They think only of miracles. This man touched somebody and the man was healed. Or this man touched somebody else and the man was blind and his eyes were restored. These are great miracles. For the ordinary mind, magicians are more impressive. They can't see the only miracle that has happened in this man. The very being of this man is a miracle. All other miracles are just byproducts. Not that he is doing them. Jesus never said that I have done any miracles. Once a woman touched him. She was afraid to come in front of him. She had leprosy. And she was ugly. And she was afraid to come in front of him and ask to be healed. But she had faith. She just touched. When Jesus was passing through the crowd, just from the behind, she touched his body. Suddenly Jesus turned. The woman was healed. And the woman said in deep gratefulness that you healed me, Lord. Jesus said, don't say that. Your faith has healed you. Your faith, not Jesus. Or many times he says, it is God who has healed you, not me. He is just a vehicle. But people are more interested in miracles. Scholars are interested in scriptures. Ordinary people are more interested in miracles. Nobody seems to be interested in the fact of this man who is standing before them. This tremendously innocent energy, this flowering of consciousness. Nobody is interested to look directly in Jesus. The Pharisees heard that and the people murmured such things concerning him. And the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. These are the three types of people Jesus is surrounded continuously. The crowd who believes in miracles. The people who have their investments in religion, the priests, the Pharisees, who are afraid that this man is becoming every day more and more important. And the scholars, the pundits, the rabbis, who are interested only in dead scriptures, in dead words and knowledge. These are the three types of peoples he is surrounded continuously. And the fourth type, there are very few who are trying to understand this man, who he is, who are not worried about his scriptures, because the scripture is alive here now, who are not worried about the miracles, because the greatest of all miracles has happened, that a man has realized that he is not separate from the whole. The ego has disappeared. That is the greatest miracle there is. The people who have no investment in religion, who have no self-interest in religion, who are not worried about the temple and the establishment and other things, very few people who are interested just in this man as he is, without any prejudice, without any concept. These few people could see through Jesus and could find God through him. He became a door. He says again and again, I am the gate, I am the door, I am the way. Only for few people he was, those whose eyes were not clouded by anything, who could look through this man through and through. Then Jesus said unto them, yet a little while am I with you, and then I go unto him that sent me. It is such a great phenomenon that it cannot be longer. The earth won't allow it. I was reading of an Urdu poet, Mirza Ghalib's life. In a poet's gathering, a very young boy, just 12 or 13 years of age, recited such beautiful poetry of his own creation that Ghalib, a master, asked again and again to the boy to recite it. And then in the end he started crying and weeping. Ghalib crying and weeping. And somebody asked, why are you crying? Ghalib said, this boy will not live long. And just within 6 months the boy died. People ask, why you say this? He said, he is so beautiful. He has something tremendous in him. The earth will not be able to tolerate such beauty. He is not ordinary. He is not mediocre. Whenever a man becomes enlightened, that is his last life, then he cannot enter again into the world, because the world is too rough and he becomes too refined. Then he is just a fragrance, subtle, with no solidity in it. And then the fragrance goes on higher and higher. It cannot come down. Whenever a man becomes enlightened, it is difficult to remain in the body. Almost impossible. One has to be continuously aware any moment the body can drop. Jesus continuously says to his disciples, yet a little while am I with you, and then I go unto him that sent me, and then I return to the whole. Then the wave disappears into the ocean. In the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. I have heard the day Woodrow Wilson died, the doctors, feeling that his death is coming closer and closer, apprised him about the nearness of death. Just few seconds before he died, they decided to tell the old man. They told him that the death is coming closer and closer. He opened his eyes and said, "Ready." That was all. Closed his eyes, a smile on his face, and he disappeared. A Jesus is always ready. The readiness to go back, the readiness to fall back into the source, because Jesus is ripe. And whenever a fruit is ripe, the fruit can say, "Yet a little while, I am with you," with the tree, "a little while, and then I go unto him that sent me," and then the fruit drops to the earth and disappears into the earth from where it comes. Whenever you have become ripe, you disappear. That is the meaning of the Eastern concept of becoming free from birth and death. Whenever you become ready, there is no need for you to be thrown back into existence again and again. You are thrown back because you don't learn the lesson. It is like a child who fails every time and he has to be sent back again to the same class. If he learns the lesson, passes the examination, then he is sent to another class, a higher one. And when he finishes the education, then there is no need to go back there. The world is a training, a discipline. You are sent again and again because you have not yet learned the lesson. Once you learn it, you are back to the original source. Jesus is constantly aware. Buddha is constantly aware. Whether Buddha lasted for 40 years and Jesus lasted only for 3 years, it doesn't make much difference. Because in the vast eternity, 40 years is just a little longer more. In the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried, saying, before he was crucified, he cried, saying, "If any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink, because soon I will disappear. And then you will not be able to drink from me. If any man thirst," if somebody is thirsty, let him come and drink of me. Because soon I will be gone. And then you can think about me, but you will not be able to quench your thirst. Jesus is water of eternity, a divine well. He can quench your thirst. But people are not aware even of their thirst. They have forgotten their thirst. They have suppressed it. That's why he says, "If any man thirst." Everybody is thirsty. There is no need to say if. Have you come across a man who is not thirsty? Have you come across a man who is not miserable? Have you come across a man who is not unhappy? Have you come across a man who is content, needs no more, who is fulfilled, needs nothing else to be added to him? If you have not come across such a man, that means every man is thirsty. But people have forgotten their thirst. Will be better to say they have suppressed their thirst, because the thirst is dangerous. The thirst creates search, and one has to seek, and one has to make effort, and one has to dig deep into oneself. People avoid their thirst. One man few days before came to me and said that I don't want to come and listen to you because I am afraid. I may really become interested in you and in what you say. I will come one day, but not now. I have other things to do. Have you thought that you may be avoiding your basic thirst? Religion is a basic thirst. No man can become satisfied and fulfilled unless he attains to a religious consciousness. There is no other way to be fulfilled. But people go on saying, they say there is no God. That may be just a defense. Because once they prove to themselves there is no God, then there is no need to seek and search. Then they can remain wherever they are. Then they can remain in their mud, and there is no need to seek the lotus. That's why Jesus says, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. Jesus is available. It has been always so. There are people who have attained and who are available, and you are thirsty. But this is the misery, that you deny. That you deny such people who can quench your thirst. You deny that they have anything. You deny that there is any water in their well. Because you are afraid. The greatest fear in life is the fear of God. The fear of coming close to God. Because coming closer to God will mean coming closer to the death of the ego. Coming closer to God will mean going farther from yourself. Coming closer to God will mean dropping, surrendering, disappearing. The greatest fear in the world is that of God. Because God is both death to the ego and birth, a rebirth of consciousness. But you don't know about the rebirth. You only can feel the death. You are just like a small child who is just going to be born, is in the womb. For 9 months he has lived a certain life of very comfort, convenience. In fact, never again he will be so comfortable. The womb is so comfortable, so warm, and without any responsibilities. He has not to go to work in the factory or office. He simply receives everything ready-made. No worries, no fear, no responsibilities, no anxieties. He simply rests. He sleeps 24 hours. And then suddenly comes the moment when he has to be born. The child becomes afraid. Because the child can only see that this life is going to be destroyed, the life that he has been living for these 9 months. He cannot see that a different life, a life of open sky and air and the sun, a tremendous opportunity to grow, But he cannot see because he, how can he see? He has no idea of it. He can only see this, that the life that he has been living is going to be destroyed. The birth to the child looks like death. He is afraid. He trembles. He don't want to get out of the womb. The same happens again when you reach nearer to another rebirth of consciousness, where again you find another world, the world of God, called Kingdom of God, of infinite light, of eternal beauty, of absolute truth. But you know your life, the life of the market, the life of the family, the house, the money, the ambition, the desire, the body. You know this. And moving towards God means going away from this. It looks like death. God is death, because God is rebirth also. That's why Jesus says, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. And the same I say unto you, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. Because yet a little while more am I with you. And then I go unto him that sent me. Remember, I am not interested in commenting on Jesus. Through Jesus, I am creating again a situation which is absolutely new, or absolutely ancient, which is the same. If any of you really feels thirsty, then the possibility is available. Don't miss it. And you can miss it. And you can find 1001 excuses how to miss it. Don't listen to those excuses. Drop those excuses. Seek your thirst. If you are thirsty, then I am ready to become a well for you. The thirst can disappear, and only when your thirst disappears, for the first time you will feel what life is, the meaning of it, the beauty of it, the glory of it. Then life will become a decoded message to you. Up till now, you are carrying the seed. The message is there, but undeciphered. Let me help you. If you are thirsty, don't try to escape from me. Let me help you. Enough for today.